You're listening to Level Up with Melissa Zalouf.
So welcome back, everyone. I'm Melissa Zalouf, and you're listening to Level Up, the podcast for people who love making, growing, and of course, playing mobile games. Today, I'm here with Stefano Accorsato. I didn't ask you how to pronounce your name. Normally, I do that, but
man,
I got it right. Who's the head of business development at Tutotunes, and we're going to be talking about driving growth through IP partnerships. Stefano, thank you so much for being with us on the show today.
Thank you for having me. That's an honor.
We're excited to have you. So to kick things off, we like to ask people to sort of tell the story of how they got into gaming. So tell us a little bit about your story.
Yeah. So I've been gaming since 2019. And actually, I started with Tutotunes, and then I stick with Tutotunes until now. I come from ad tech before. So I used to work in an ad tech company that was originally from Denmark. But still, the office was in Vilnius and in Lithuania, and that's where I still live, in Lithuania. And once I got into gaming, I decided, okay, this time I'm going to do something different. I'm going to get out of ads, and I'm going to get into QA. And then I started as a game tester, actually. That sounded fun, and that sounded interesting at the beginning. And I was really like in a period when I needed something different. But then 6 months in, I got this call from one of the co-founders and said, you know, we're building all the ad monetization and user acquisition pipeline, and we need someone that understands that already. And I was like, okay, as if my past is catching up. So I decided I'm up for it. There were anyway new things in it compared to what I used to do before. And since 2019, let's say summertime until the end of last year, I would say, I stick with UA and monetization. I help building the teams, hiring the people, setting up the processes as well, and heading up the whole department for a while. And during that time, I've been really a part of the industry. Like, I started going into conferences. Of course, COVID hit, so no conference at all. But then 2022 started, the first PGC after COVID happened, and then I started to get involved in the network and started to getting to know a lot of people. And I really like that. I really like this part of the job of like going around and finding out things and asking questions or being pitched as well sometimes and learning from that. A lot of the times being pitched, actually.
Yeah.
That's... And then, you know, after several years of doing that, still our field is quite peculiar because it's kids games. So also how you do admon in UA, it's a little bit different than how you do it on any kind of games. And at some point I felt like maybe I needed something new, but I really didn't know what was that. And then at the end of last year just happened the chance to change position because we saw more the need to focus on business questions. And so we started to create this role of like business development in Tutotunes, and I decided to kind of accept this new offer, so to say.
So maybe that's a good segue for sort of like diving a little bit to what business development at Tutotunes actually means.
Yeah, that's a good question. And this is something that confuses most people everywhere, internally, externally, and so on. Because, you know, business dev is intended as that person that works for usually a service provider and tries to pitch you their product and bring leads to the team and so forth. So in terms of gaming studios, because still I've met also business devs from game studios also, it really, really depends on the product. It really depends on what are your internal processes. So in the case of Tutotunes, for me, it's still kind of keeping the line that I had before. So if I travel to conferences, which I will probably do even more since this year, and I hear about new tools, new products, whether it are for UA or admon as well, I will still try to get to understand what they are about. And then just, I won't continue the implementation. I will pass the contact internally to the new leads. And then any other thing that relates also to technology, I don't know, analytics solutions or something that relates to testing, you know, anything that I hear that could mean potentially benefit for Tutotunes in our internal process and scale, I go for it, I get interested in that, and I try to put the right people in contact. But when it comes to something more my focus at this moment, it's understanding how can we bring new experiences in games. And one of that is also IP collaborations, basically. So for me now, talking with brands or people that represent brands, it's also one of my, you know, fun parts of the day, basically. I really spend a lot of time on this and try to bring this collaboration. I'm trying to understand honestly still, like, how exactly should it work and what should we do internally to make it happen? Is it something new for us? Partially new, say. But in the way we want to do it now is definitely new, and we're going to be ready just at the end of this quarter to support certain kind of limited time events. So it's a lot about IPs at the moment for me.
Mm-hmm. So it's, you see, you're giving me all my segues, because we do want to dive into talking about how Tutor Tunes is leveraging IP to drive growth. And it is it's been a challenging growth market for a while, right? So I think, having an eye to thinking creatively, sort of like outside the box of classic growth strategies is probably smart. How is it that you guys started even thinking of partnering with big sort of IP or toy IP?
Well, it's not something totally new for us. We've done IP, we did some licensing deals in the past, but that meant more standalone games, full mobile apps. So we partnered with Spin Master in the past. When I was still in QA, actually, I was testing the Spin Master games. And then in 2021, in summer 21, we released LOL-based games. So LOL is these dolls that are very popular between young girls mostly, and the MGA is behind them. And we started to create quite a nice relationship with MGA. So we had this first game, and then either last year or the year before, now I'm a little bit confused, we released as well another title, also based on LOL, but on a different series of dolls, which are more like for twins and teenagers. So we really specialize, I would say, on the topic of doll games, right?
Mm-hmm.
When you make dolls, you style dolls, crazy hairstyles, crazy clothing and stuff like that. But still within the field of kids, right? So we try to keep it close to what we used to do before. And it really comes from our previous experience as we had this game series in the past until when I joined up. It was called Sweet Baby Girl. And it was really about, well, girl design, girl styling, girl content all the way. And we really connected with this experience we had in the field. Yeah, I would say it was the main thing that we did before. And now we're trying to see, okay, can we look at it in a different way? Should IP licensing just related to a full standalone game, which requires a lot of effort from development perspective? And still, I mean, you go with brands that would probably make sense for you, but you still never know until the end how it's going to work. Now we realize that we already have a brand ourselves. We have our top game, Fluffsies. And it's been on the top since 2021, and no other game we published since then managed to take the place of Fluffsies. Still, we try to build new games that are a new success for us, but we can't deny that Fluffsies, it is already a success. So we started developing Fluffsies as a brand itself, so we now call it our internal brand, and we are trying to grow it. And this is one of these year focuses, by the way, for Tutor Tunes, is to grow Fluffsies as a brand. And we also launched our YouTube series based on Fluffsies at the end of December, and we already see a really good traction there. We didn't do any promotion yet, but we still are almost at 1 million views, so that's great.
So and the idea is, and like, how do you leverage IP in a more agile way to invest in an existing big game? Because I think another thing that we're seeing is that it is harder for new games to break out and succeed. It's getting harder and harder. Whereas kind of existing games that are doing well sort of are ending up doubling down on their sort of market share. So I'm anticipating that you're going to tell us that this shift in leveraging IP is much less about, okay, now I'm going to go build a whole dedicated game versus leveraging the IP to build additional experiences inside a big existing game.
Exactly. That's basically it, you know. Like we refer to it as limited time events, which is a common term for this kind of... But more that rather than live ops, because live ops is more like, you know, this personalization of the experience, this customization for each user, which in kids is not that easy to obtain and to compliantly. We're not getting there. But more having regular events planned throughout the year so that Fluffsies gets new locations in the game where the kids can explore and interact with different chars. And in this case, it's going to be branded chars. But we're also going to have our own internal limited time events based on the existing Fluffseas content, but with way different style, maybe way different approach and topics, basically, that we're going to touch. But we thought, why not? Why, if we're already building a calendar of events for ourselves, why shouldn't we introduce at some point a 2 weeks event with, I don't know, a great IP, a great toy IP, or maybe also so what something like we did with LOL, maybe something related with that as well. So we can do that, you know. So what's the interest in it? For us, it's clear what's the interest, but what's the interest there for the IPs? Do they want to do this phase? Do they see value in that? So I'm really trying to measure, basically, and speak with people and understand, is it actually a valuable offer or not?
How common is this sort of, because it sounds very, like a very smart way of responding to a bunch of different sort of like market trends around gaming right now, sort of like some of the old market pressures around gaming right now. But as you said, it's also not the typical sort of IP engagement that big brands might be used to hearing about from game studios. So first part of the question is, how common do you think this new approach to sort of like leveraging IP in a more agile, limited way is? And the second thing is, if it's not common, how are you sort of finding the education process with brands? Sort of how are you pitching it to them?
Yeah, this is also a good question. And this is exactly something that I probably need to figure out better for myself, to clarify for myself. But what I see is, first of all, it is not completely a new approach. I spoke with some IPs that we did it already, you know. So it's like, oh, great. So yeah, I don't need to, you know, get too deep into it, you know, exactly how it looks like the offering. It's just about the game and how do we make it work. But so it's happening, just maybe is not as visible as standalone games are, because those gets promoted very much. They get, you know, maybe they become hits or something. Like a limited time event can become a hit. So visibility is completely different. People do that. And the challenge that I face the most is that obviously when you talk about IP licensing, you're talking about a revenue deal at some point in the life, right? So if we talk about revenue, just revenue, well, it's maybe less realistic to think that this is going to bring like a huge, you know, profit to both sides for those 2 weeks or a month of limited time event. Like, doesn't make too much sense to just focus on this aspect. So then the talk is more around the fact that, okay, let's understand what is the scale of this deal. And based on that, let's try to see what could be the financial outcome of this. And let's be realistic about it. But the other thing that I'm trying to kind of raise as a value is the brand awareness that the brand gets through these kind of deals.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, although it's very, as a marketer, I know how difficult it is to quantify. I mean, people try and there are different ways, but it's very difficult to sort of really get concrete about the value of brand awareness.
But, you know, what I usually look at, and maybe I spoke too much with licensing people and too less with marketing people, but anyway, not all of them, but some of the IPs we are working with, they already run standard video campaigns in our games, the usual networks, so to say. So they are okay with spending money on video impressions. Yes, there is an analytics system behind that gives you insight on that, but not all the time, and especially not in kids' games, is so detailed. It's anyway mostly about views and completion rates and so forth. Is there such a big difference in the first place between launching a video campaign, which the users are already very used to interact with? They're very used to skip it or to ignore that ad for those 30 seconds or 15 seconds, you name it.
Versus like a full immersive experience that someone would play with, right?
Exactly. Like the value of engagement, like I'm not just seeing your brand char popping up in front of my face and then forgetting it forever once the ad is over, but actually I can play with it for 2 full weeks, technically 24/7. So it's way higher value in terms of brand engagement than a regular video campaign can give, right?
So what you're saying is that actually how you're framing this in terms of value is less about look at the potential for revenue, and this is it's kind of like an advertising opportunity for them.
Yeah. And there is more to that, because once we are going to launch the limited time event, there is also the store visibility for the event.
Mm-hmm.
Then it's ASO work that we do, but there is also the paid user acquisition that we do and the cross promotion that we do within our network of games. So the amount of visibility for those couple of weeks or 4 weeks, it's quite huge, actually.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And talking just about one game of ours, the top game, obviously, but it's still one. And the potential there basically in awareness is big, but we need mm-hmm. to test it.
Mm-hmm. You talked a little bit about some of the challenges around operating kids games and what you can and can't do. And I'm curious if that shows up also in working with toy brands or toy IP and how, what's the word? Not conservative, sort of cautious they are with cool. their sort of brand and how experiences. It's kind of like two questions, right? One is how important is kind of brand safety to brands like that? And the second is also how heavy-handed do you find them then to be in approving what that eventual experience feels and looks like?
I would say that, let's say I never received a question so straightforward, which is like, tell me how you're going to ensure brand awareness, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
I never didn't hear that. Maybe I've seen that before when I was working in ad tech, that brand safety was, brand safety, not awareness. Brand safety, it's so important, because when you are just running on regular web, like, you never know where your ad is going to end up, and then whatever that's that publishing website and so on, especially if it's news and stuff. Anyway, once we already talk about a collaboration with us, they already know what kind of games they're talking
mm-hmm.
with. Not necessarily they play them though. So definitely we go more into the conversation of like, what do we offer? What is our content? What is based on values and so forth? But I think it is part of the offer as well, the fact that they get into games which are mainly intended for a very young audience.
Mm-hmm.
So they know already that their brand is not going to be close by to any violent content.
Mm-hmm.
Or
It's like pre-safe environment.
Exactly. Or like suggestive themes, as it is written in the guidelines of Google Play. So definitely there is none of that.
Mm-hmm.
So this is one thing. But the other thing is that still, whenever you are having a collaboration with a game dev studio, you should know as well as a brand like how they monetize.
Mm-hmm.
So is the monetization just going to be for in-app purchases? Is it a premium game or mm-hmm. there is ads? And many times there are ads. So that's one thing that we also like to put inside our pitch, so to say, because it does represent the reality of things, which is that Tutto took such a huge effort in ads quality since the very beginning. So when I started working in AdMon in 2019, actually, I didn't start from setting up all the networks in the mediation and just pressing the live button and let it do whatever it wanted. But we started from ads quality. So we started from reviewing all the ads that we were showing, and first of all, making sure that the worst stuff is already blocked, and then we're going to go live and scale up ad monetization. So now that was a very initial kind of idea of it in 2019, but through the years, it became very professional.
Mm-hmm.
And lately, it became very scalable thanks to the Level Play ads quality tool that we, for example. So all the information that Level Play ads quality collects on all the ads that we show, we mm-hmm. are able to pull all that information via API and then feed a tool that we built for that. And probably we are not the most liked customer from networks, because we send them block list requests every single day, and we were mm-hmm. quite hated, I guess. But but in a way, we are proud of it, because we know that it's really about making the experience as safe as we can while still ensuring that we have a revenue stream. And this is also something that it's important for brands to realize and to like about collaborating with us.
Last question, although maybe we'll loop back to ad quality on the kind of brand piece. How much tension do you find there to be between, or maybe you guys haven't reached this point yet, between this is how we want to preserve the kind of the brand of the game, right? Which also you want to, you've talked about investing in making the game itself more of an independent brand, and the external brand that you're sort of running on the limited time events. Does that tend to be an easy process, or is it like, oh no, we want it to feel much more native, I know we're not naming names, right? But we want it to feel more native to our brand versus your game.
There are two situations. Like, there is a situation when you work with a brand that never did any in-game collab, any in-game adaptation of their brand. And that's where obviously this discussion is way more important and way more present. And yes, it's not easy. Like, the way that we kind of approach it is like, okay, let's look at it from different point of views. Let's look at it from our creative direction point of view, but also theirs. And then let's try to see how we could fit both of them. And this is actually probably the first thing we worry about. It's like, but does the art style match our game, or can we do something with it, and that's the question. Like, if it's too far from us, maybe we love the char, we love the character and the theme, and it's super cute and totally fits our game, right, from the values perspective. And it's like, oh my god, that's a 3D hyper-realistic kind of character, you know, like we are 2D stylized kind of way. So then we need to start the discussion of like, should this be more on your style, or should it be adapted to our style? Maybe we can make a location where we keep your style, but then we make our chars, our fluffsies in your style for this occasion. Then the time related with this development will be longer, obviously, but we really need to find a good match there, and it's quite a discussion. On the other hand, there is a different situation, which is when you speak with IPs that already know what a limited time event is. Already did that in the past. And they, because they have more experience with this, they already come and say, we think these charts would fit, you know? And then you look at it, it's like, well, yeah, thank you. We don't really need to find what should work out, because you already understand it by looking at our game and having your experience with your IP. So then it's definitely an important talk, but it's not necessarily always a problem.
Maybe that's a good sort of segue to asking how you guys go about choosing the sort of the best fit IPs to partner with.
How to say? It's not like you open up a list of IPs and it's
like this one, yellow pages. I will have this one and this one and this one. Yeah, it's not, on a menu. It's not
that direct. Who do you have connections with? Who are you managing to meet up when you go to conferences and so forth? And then, you know, you don't meet with, usually there are companies that handle brands, right? So you speak with a representative of that company that develops toys, and they usually have some brands, at least five, say, or 10 or whatever. And then you speak with them and say, you know, we like your toys, and we also are in the kids space, and we are really known in that space. So what do you think where we could work out together, you know? And then they think about maybe this or maybe that, you know, and then we review the style, as I said before, and what is the brand about. And then we see if it's a good match. So it's more about this, I would say. It's an ongoing, you know, discovery of possibilities knowing already, like, yes, we want exactly that thing, you know.
Right.
Because there's so many things out there. Yeah. It's the network. It's the openness as well of different brand companies to kind of speak with gaming companies as well.
And I'm sort of curious how you found these partnerships, or what the impact you assume they'll have on growth from a few different perspectives, right? One is, to what degree, if any, is cross promotion kind of part of the mix, and not cross promotion within Tutotunes' network of games, but also sort of like, okay, you have these brands presumably have an existing audience of fans or people who buy the toys and love the toys, and how do you leverage that? And then sort of as a follow on, how do you assume, or how have you seen these kinds of limited time events impact things like engagement, monetized revenue? I don't know if you're using them as part of your UA, but how, you know, does it lower CPI to be able to leverage a big brand? I just asked you like 7 questions in one, so you can none of us talk for a while.
All right. So I can definitely give you some examples from the previous collaborations we did when we built standalone games and tell you what is the impact that we see with this kind of work. And then maybe about the hopes for LTEs and what they can bring and what maybe even better they can bring, so to say. So yeah, we always start from the fact that an IP has already an existing user base, an audience. Sometimes is an audience that very much matches our audience. Sometimes is maybe even an older audience that maybe used to interact with this brand when they were kids, right? And now they have young kids playing new games, and maybe they would like to see that brand in their kids' games.
Oh, so it's like a nostalgia play.
Yeah.
I'm
yeah,
trying to think what I would play. Yeah, continue.
And so this is something that we like to emphasize also, because when we talk about such a young audience as ours, you know, we have sometimes preschoolers playing our games. Tend to think, and we do see that obviously as well in the reviews, sometimes positive, sometimes not, the parents are present in the life of the kids. So they also interact with our games to a certain extent. So if there will be something there that triggers their passion, their interest, that would be also a win situation, right? Because then they would, you know, sparkle a conversation between the parent and the child about what is that, you know, and why do we know it, you know, and so forth. So what I'm trying to say here is that because the brands are known usually, it's easier to get the attention on the store listing. And the same if you would run paid UA on the ad that you are showing, right? There is a question more like, where do you do your UA? What kind of channel? Is it more reaching out to the parents or to the kids? And this is also a very big discussion, which I'm not going to get too deep into right now. But basically, we do see that thanks to this collaboration, there is a higher influx of organics to our apps, fully standalone IP licensed games. So we still put effort on the UA side, but we don't have to push it as much to reach similar scale as with other games that are purely internal brands. That's one win situation. The other one is around the fact that, well, the lower CPI comes from the fact of the higher IPM that comes with it. And as well, the retention and engagement, you know, it can change as well pretty much compared to the other titles that we have.
Okay.
Actually, almost all the game metrics tends to shift a little bit. You hope for the better. Of course, that's not necessarily the
case. There'll be some impact.
There is
and
always
how do you, how do you imagine this might play out in a sort of like limited time event scenario? Where you also are not sort of, it's not necessarily that you're trying to drive install, that the sort of funnel's a little bit more complicated.
Well, it's really about... the players kind of will see anyway, because it's also going to be not just a limited time event inside the game, but it's also going to be an event on the store page. So when the users get promoted, I'll say suggested our game when searching on the Play Store or on the App Store, they get as well straight away the view on the event that is happening inside the app at that point. And if that is with a brand that they can connect with, the conversion rate is going to automatically increase. Or as well for the UA, similar kind of approach here. And then plus you have this that it's a limited time event. Like you either play it for the next 2 weeks or, well, you don't know when is next time. We honestly don't know if that's next time. So that's kind of the urgency that it kind of grows in the user to kind of, okay, I'm going to go and try it out. Then if I don't like it, I will not play it. But at least this first step, it's easier to achieve. The fun. It's a little bit shorter here.
So I'm sort of, I wonder, you don't know this yet, presumably, but I would be curious to compare, I don't know if you could do such a thing, right? But to compare the impact on CPI from, or IPM, right? Let's say from a standalone game leveraging an IP to a UA campaign for an existing game that's leveraging IP from a limited time event. I wonder if you could get a similar positive impact effect without as much investment in having to. But I guess that's the whole discussion we're having. I'm sort of curious what you... I have two questions. One is, what's the sort of... And they're connected. What's the typical sort of like time to market, let's say, for something like this? So from the moment of doing that kind of network exploration of, okay, who do I know and what might be relevant there and having those conversations until you're sort of like, okay, experience is developed, ready to be deployed live in the game. How long does that typically take? And then sort of in as a related question, what advice would you give to sort of other game studios who are curious about trialing this kind of partnership or collaboration?
Yeah. Actually, also, your last point is very much connected to the time needed for the collaboration. Mm-hmm. We know that for standalone games, of course, for very, very simple ones, like we did more with Spin Master, don't remember now exactly the development time and everything, but let's count that the whole process from contact to release is at least a year, right? But if you do a more complex games, you can expect anything above a year, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So a good year and a half, or sometimes 2 years for releasing a more complex game. So as you understand, this is a very big commitment in terms of process, in terms of direction, and in terms of, well, what you're going to get out of it, basically. How fast is it going to pay off, basically. Now, when it comes to limited time events, the whole discussion is way shorter, but still not as quick as like, oh, yeah, let's talk tomorrow and next month we're going to have it. But you can count tomorrow about like a 6 month sort of period, right? Now, this is something I figure out better. If you ask me in a year from now, I will let you know more like, hey, well, I figure out that that's exactly it. But speaking with more experienced people out there that already did these things, so it's usually around half a year. But this is from the perspective of, as you know, I'm reaching out to someone or I'm being reached out by someone and we start the conversation and we speak internally and then we define the ideas and then we plan for the window we want to go live into, because it's also a lot about this. Like, plan ahead enough so that you have enough time for all the negotiations / approvals that you need to have. And maybe you will be ready way faster than the window when you decided to go live. But the limited time event makes very sense, let's say, for Halloween, right? So even if we have everything ready by June, we are still not going to go live until November or October, actually. So sometimes you just change a little bit because just the limited time event has to happen at a certain point.
Right.
Started some conversations already last month, let's say, but our discussion is about the brand wanting something, you know, in 2026, right? So it's going to take automatically a year and a half from point of contact to release, but not because it's too complex, just because
that's when it makes sense for the brand. Right.
And this is connected to the fact of like what suggestion I could give to other companies, basically. And first of all, it's around the resources. So all you need to understand, what is your resources and what are your goals for this next year? Because it's all about this in the first place. If you're not committed for this, any of it, then, well, why should you then get involved in it? Or if you are knowing that definitely two-year development plan is not what you're looking for right now, but you would like still to get involved, then the limited time event could be an option, right? So, or you can call it also like, I also talked a lot about now limited time events as such, because that's how we want to approach technically the kind of collaboration. But sometimes you can see it as a crossover. You know, there are some examples from last year of like gaming brands, purely gaming, that decide, oh, I'm going to be part of that game for 2 weeks and that other part will be part of my content strategy for, I don't know, YouTube, right? So you make these things as well. So that's another way to approach IP collaborations, which is not necessarily a licensing deal, but it's a collaboration for whatever, awareness, marketing, or revenue purposes.
And last question, then we'll let you go because we are coming to time. But I'm sort of curious, as you were talking about sort of having different conversations that are going to land at different calendar moments. And also, as with all deal making, right, you never know until you have to have a lot of conversations. You have to kiss a lot of frogs before you find your prince. If someone's getting started in trying to sort of do an IP collaboration in whatever form, Would you advise them to sort of spread the net wide, have lots of conversations and see what lands? Or is that risky because you may not have the resources to be able to actually deploy multiple engagements?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good question because it touches me very personally. And because I feel like I'm doing this kind of fishing job right now and like throwing the net out there and see what I can find. Maybe because I'm so much into the explorative phase at this moment.
Mm-hmm.
Right this morning, actually, I was thinking about, okay, it doesn't make sense for me to continue this way, or should I look at it more targeting opportunities rather
than... Right.
Yeah, exactly. But I believe that still you want to have options on the table. And you don't want to point all your energy into one, and if it doesn't work out, you need to start from zero again. But you need to be reasonable with it. And I believe you should be open with the brand, with the IP, the people you're talking to about what is the reality of things. That, I mean, it doesn't make any sense to just go and overpromise something that, yeah, sure, we're going to make like 3 events this year and then I have another 5 brands that I'm promising the same thing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Or like, let's have conversations, let's talk about it, let's see what can work, and then let's see if it does make sense to do already something this quarter, in Q4 or next year, you know, and let's see what happens. But you just need to know that, need to have this feeling that, okay, you are having conversations, you're learning something from it. And so you can do something about it. You know, if you don't talk just with one brand and you think that this brand is going to work out and then 6 months are passing and enters out the brand actually changed their mind,
you're screwed.
You're not in the best place there. So I will see where I've been 12 months, but now I'm trying to have at least a few options available. Nothing is confirmed, obviously. But at least we have what to work on. We have what to brainstorm on and get feedback about. So that, sometimes it feels like shooting a little bit in the dark, but with the fact that I let people know that I'm a little bit shooting in the dark right now. So bear with me. And also the people you want to collaborate with, you know, like you find your people that you want to spend the next 6 months exchanging emails, calls, right? Have fun while doing that and not feeling like it's a torture every single time. So maybe that's all.
That's the best advice. Very honest advice. Stefano, thank you so much for coming on today. It sort of feels like we need to schedule a follow-up in maybe sort of like 6 months to check in on how the process has been and what results look like. But as a start, this has been very, very interesting and informative and hopefully helpful for everyone listening. So thank you very much for being on the show today.
Thank you.
And thank you, as always, to everyone for listening. We will see you next episode.